Welcome back. You are listening to Nate the Hate on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Be sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel if you have not already. And with that, I'd like to dedicate this episode to the Zelda Sensei and Shamsa, both whom have generously donated $100 to support the channel. And if you'd like to support the channel, we have a Streamlabs link in the description below. Donate any dollar amount, ask a question, we will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, and we will dedicate the episode to you. And today's episode, once again, is dedicated to the Zelda Sensei and Shamsa. And today's episode is going to be unique. It's essentially going to be a call-in show without the call-in. We are going through the backlog of Streamlabs questions dating back to January 5th to catch up on all the questions and donations that people have made over the last couple of months. But with that, let me welcome in my co-host for the episode, Modern Vintage Gamer.
Hello, Nate. It's great to be here. This backlog episode is probably my fault more than anything else, so I take responsibility for it. But we're going to get through every single question this episode that we haven't discussed yet. So looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, it's going to be a broad range of topics, and we will start off with our first one coming from Medallion, who donated $18.70, and they write, "Thank you for all your years on Spawncast and your own podcast with MVG, delivering good commentary, analysis, and insider speculation and rumors with a level head, clear, logical, and informative. Thank you."
Thanks, Medallion.
The second comes from Average Cheap College Gamer, who donated $1. "It's strange to me that Microsoft pushes Game Pass harder than they push the Xbox brand. To most of us college PC gamers, Xbox Game Pass is an app we flip on a couple of times a year to play Microsoft first-party games, then flip it off for a little too low cost."
Well, I will tell you, I'm not a college student. And I do exactly the same thing. I will re-up on Game Pass when something is coming out. Last year, I did it for Starfield, and I have since deactivated my Game Pass subscription. But when Hellblade 2 releases later this year, I will probably pick it up again. And that's just the way I do it.
Yeah, and I would definitely think there's a case to be made for 2024 being a strong year for Game Pass subscribers. As you mentioned, Hellblade 2 will kick things off in May. And then we have titles like Avowed coming out. And, you know, Indiana Jones. So it's a good lineup of games coming from first party Microsoft studios this year. So you'll definitely get a value from Game Pass in 2024. And ideally that carries into 2025. But Game Pass definitely caters to a very specific audience. I'd say the college demographic is one of those audiences. You can invest for a minimal amount, get your fill of what you're playing, forget about it, and come back at a later date. So maybe that is an audience Microsoft is trying to cater to. Maybe they do have grander ambitions, but they definitely have a lot they still need to work out in terms of long-term Game Pass subscription retention. Then had a dollar donation from Garbear. "Hello, Nate and MVG. Thanks for being a great and calm podcast. I see Xbox fans lose faith over more people able to play games when that's Xbox's philosophy, and I find it interesting. What's your thoughts? Also, here's hoping for more Halo campaign soon."
What do you think?
I mean, I think it's very interesting how people did react to the news of Microsoft bringing select games to the PlayStation and Nintendo Switch platforms, with obviously an ambition to bring more in the future beyond the initial four offerings. But I've also seen some people kind of go that angle of, oh, I have no purpose now to invest in the Xbox ecosystem, and I'll just play their games on PC. And I find that take to be interesting, because you could have done that this entire generation. You didn't have to wait for them to bring PlayStation or games to PlayStation or Switch to commit to the PlayStation ecosystem to play Microsoft games. And I understand where people are coming from in the sense of, if I don't have faith in the brand, why should I continue to invest in it? But Microsoft is trying to branch out. They're trying to make Xbox a brand beyond just the console box. And this could make them one of the most powerful and largest publishers in the video game industry. And to coincide with that, they also have hardware to sell. So in the immediate, I could see where a fan and consumer is looking at it with a bit of hesitation. But in terms of business sense, this could be a very lucrative expansion for Microsoft and the Xbox brand. It's just that we're still in not even the infancy stage. We're kind of in the pregnancy stage of this planning, and that future remains so unknown that a lot are scared of what the future is for the Xbox brand. But we have to wait to see how things develop. In 10 years, this could lead to a very big expansion for Xbox as a whole. It's just that idea of, will we have to wait that long to see the results of this? And as a consumer, that's really not a concern. Your only concern as a consumer and a fan is that you get games and a platform you want to play them on. So I could see where, from a non-business sense, what Microsoft is doing is concerning. But if you do look at it from a business sense, it has a lot of merit.
Yeah, I agree. Mostly, I will say, though, that we haven't really seen much yet. So I want to kind of see what the next 12 to 18 months looks like. Yes, there's going to be more games beyond the initial four. I think it's a fair thing to say, right? Like, the initial four games, I heard stories about it being like a test. They were testing the market. I don't know if that's true or not, but yeah, I want to see more games and kind of the reaction to that. But I do agree with you that I think Xbox doesn't really care where you play their games. They don't really care. As long as you're playing Xbox games, they don't really have a strong mm-hmm. preference where you play them. That includes PlayStation and PC.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen the rumors come out over the last week with interviews where Phil Spencer seems to be heavily implying that desire to have an Xbox handheld. So if they can expand into that market, it's all about just putting Xbox in the hands of as many people via any mean necessary. And if that is on other platforms, be it Nintendo or PlayStation, then that is an avenue that they are going to explore. It just comes down to, I guess, which games they will be using. And as long as it's not day and date with their major first party games, and I'm talking iconic games like the Gears of War, the Halos, the Fables, Perfect Darks, as long as those games remain Game Pass exclusive on the Xbox, and I'd say brand exclusive on the Xbox will always have a place to lure in individuals. Now, if a game from, you know, a subsidiary, be it like a Bethesda game or some of the Activision games, because naturally Activision games are going to go multi-platform beyond Call of Duty. So if a title like, let's say Spyro the Dragon, as an example, goes to Nintendo and PlayStation, I don't think anyone should react to that negatively. I'd say that should just be the expectation with a title like that, because it's a game of casual appeal, and you want to put it on those platforms because that's where the audience is going to be. You're not necessarily going to bring that audience to the Xbox. So bring the game to where the audience is. If the audience is on PlayStation or Nintendo, give them the game. At the end of the day, you're getting the money, you're bringing in the revenue, and you can turn that into profit, and you're going to cover the development cost of the project.
Yeah, agree.
Then had a $16.79 donation from Anonymous. Just wanted to show some love after the Twitter drama and some haters. Haha, you boys are amazing, and we can't wait for a full year of Switch 2 news. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Anonymous.
Then had a donation from South Coast Horizon of $3.74. Gamers, including the Spawncast, complain about Mario Kart 8 and how long it stuck around. Yet, I have found the Booster Course Pass DLC honestly made it a new game. Then, when your last game is so refined, what do people expect from a Mario Kart 10?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it, as far as what's next for Mario Kart? I do think Nintendo is cooking up something as far as, you know, the next Mario Kart game. I think we don't know this for sure, but I feel confident that there will be a new version of Mario Kart on the next Switch hardware at some point. I think as far as what new feature or gimmick or what they're going to show us, I couldn't say, honestly. They've done a lot of different things over the years with Mario Kart. I'm sure there's something that we haven't really even thought about that they may be bringing into the franchise. But look, Mario Kart is huge. So all they need to do is give us a new one and people will come.
Yeah, I think the issue with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe at this point is really just its age. People want to have that new innovation. They want something new to be excited for. And it's not a critique on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is still a fantastic game. Those new booster courses were very well designed. It's just, it's not as exciting when it is the same game for over a decade. Even if it is probably the most refined, if not the best Mario Kart game ever made, you just want to see that new innovation. And that's where people are tired of Mario Kart 8, because they want to see what's next for the franchise. And we're going to have to wait for the Switch 2 to get that new installment of Mario Kart and see how Nintendo is able to innovate and create new ideas for the franchise. But Mario Kart 8, still a fantastic game. I still play it weekly. And even I'm looking for something new. And if Mario Kart 10 somehow disappoints and it doesn't offer a lot of innovation or creative new ideas, I can always go back to Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and enjoy the fantastic experience Nintendo crafted for us with that. Then had a $1 donation from Ares Play. I'm worried about the next Switch performance in portable. Does screen going to be 720p again or more? Is DLSS even possible in portable? How big of a gap they're going to be between handheld and docked? How long the battery going to last? What are your thoughts? We have covered a lot of these questions in previous episodes talking about the Switch 2 dating back to last year, where we talked about what DLSS could bring to the system, how the Switch 2 could compare to the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series S when, or X and S when using DLSS. So I would kind of just, you know, point you in the direction of some of those episodes talking about that. As for, you know, the battery, that's an unknown thing that could be answered at this time. At best, we could speculate. And if I had to speculate a number, I'd say we're probably going to look at something similar to the launch Switch, you know, 3 to 5 hours at maximum, depending on whether you have the screen full brightness, Wi-Fi on, all those types of variables. But there's still a lot to learn about the system, and when we will get that level of detail remains to be determined. Then had a $20 donation from shareholder Chad. If I donate the equivalent of 2 Nintendo stock shares to you and MVG next episode, will you two join me as a Nintendo shareholder?
I think I'm okay. I'm probably good to sit that out. But appreciate the donation. Do you have any Nintendo shares, Nate? Are you going to invest?
I do not own any Nintendo shares. I actually don't have shares of any video game company as a whole, only because I've always felt as though it would be some sort of conflict of interest if I'm covering them and own stock in them.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to avoid that entire thing. It's also why I avoid Kickstarter and other campaigns like that. I don't want to invest in a game that then be talking about.
The last Kickstarter I got involved with that really annoyed me was the Wonderful 101.
Yeah, that wasn't a great investment.
It was not.
Then had a $1.09 donation from Cypress FX. Hey guys, an exciting 2024 lays ahead. Nate, have you heard anything about a Zelda Wind Waker Twilight Princess HD release for 2024 or any rumored Zelda game, maybe Ocarina of Time remake? Could you reach out to your contacts for this topic if that's not the case? Wish you, Nate and MVG, all the best. I have not heard anything about Zelda Wind Waker Twilight Princess HD release for 2024. I would certainly welcome such a release, but I don't have any information to support a claim that that is happening. As for a remake of Ocarina of Time, I would be very surprised if we see that style game see a remake, only because I feel the Zelda franchise has evolved beyond that. Breath of the Wild is the equivalent of Ocarina of Time to a significant base now, and to go back to, let's say, an outdated formula with Ocarina of Time may not see the sales that Nintendo wants from a Zelda project in the calendar year of 2024. I mean, never say never about a Zelda game coming out this year, but I haven't heard anything at this point regarding any Zelda release in the calendar year of 2024. then had a $100 donation from the Zelda Sensei. Happy 2024 to you too. Hope you both are able to find some time to relax and enjoy all the sure-to-be game and hardware releases this year. Thanks for all the great content.
Have you been relaxing so far this year? I've been relaxing. I mean, I've been working, but I've also been relaxing. It's been good so far.
Yeah, I take, you know, I always have a day or two to relax a bit, just unwind, unplug, enjoy life. It's important.
It is.
Everyone listening, be sure to do the same. Unplug. Step away from Twitter. Step away from your video game systems, your televisions, your computer monitors.
Yes.
And enjoy life and everything around you. Go for a jog, a walk. Mm-hmm. Just sit out in the sun for a little while. Read a book. Listen to music. Listen to podcasts. But live life to the fullest. And remember, it's just entertainment. They're just video games. The world is bigger than this. Then had a $10 donation from Good Twin. Nate, you have often mentioned that you have heard things but do not have clarity when discussing leaks. Can you help us understand how it is that you receive inside information without clarity? Is there not an open line of dialogue with your sources? It's more that you get a piece of information from a source that just doesn't have full context. And sometimes that is just for the benefit of their own protection. So if I get something that is vague, I'm looking for clarity. I'm looking with other contacts and sources to expand upon that information in any way they can. So if you only have one piece of the information, it's essentially the same as a puzzle. You only have one piece of the puzzle. You need more pieces to get the full image. And sometimes you can have a number of pieces, but you still can't see the entire image of exactly what's being done. And that's what I mean when I'm looking for further clarity. I only have some of the information, so I don't see the full picture just yet. And sometimes I'll never get the full picture.
That's a really good answer. And it's a very honest answer as well. And I think the other thing about this is things change, situations change. You know, like something that you may have heard 6 months ago, this situations may have changed. Like it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's really the thing too, is what was accurate 6 months ago may not be accurate today. The scope or scale of something may have been altered in the development pipeline. There's so many, you know, variables that go into game development that it's hard. And essentially the information I'm getting is work in progress. Yeah. I'm not getting anything that's already set in stone. I'm getting in the information of as it is at that point in time. So that's what I talk about when I'm looking for clarity. Just, has anything changed? Can you give me a better view of what's happening? Because it's really, as other people have said, we're taking a peek behind the curtain. But there could be, you know, a smoke machine going on the stage. So I can see the image. But I don't know exactly what the image is. I can only hear the stage hands, you know, what they're saying. Mm-hmm. This is getting too philosophical. Then had a dollar donation from Inafor. Rumors are rampant about Microsoft going third party, at least partially just to start, but it seems it's inevitable they will stop making Xbox consoles. How big of a blow will it be to the industry if Sony acquires a full monopoly on the console market?
I don't think it's inevitable that they will stop making Xbox hardware. I think Xbox hardware will be around for a while yet. I can't see a scenario where Xbox doesn't make hardware and they just make games like, you know, Sega. I don't feel like they're interested in doing that. I think they're always going to want to have hardware to play their games on, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Microsoft's always going to have some level of hardware. I think the bigger inevitability is just going to be, is Microsoft going to be a strong competitor to Sony in the home console market? And by strong competitor, I mean, are they going to be there trying to sell 80, 90 million units against the PlayStation 6, PlayStation 7? I think Microsoft has to carve their own path in the hardware industry and create a unique identity, which they used to have with the original Xbox and even the 360. And then with the Xbox One and even with the Series generation, they kind of became very derivative of exactly what Sony's been doing, but they had a few initiatives like Game Pass to kind of give them that unique identity in a sense. But they're always going to want to have hardware to sell their services, like Game Pass being one of them. It's very similar to how Microsoft also approaches the PC market. While they don't necessarily sell their own hardware, they sell their software. And when it comes to video games, I think Sony's or Microsoft's always going to want to have hardware to sell their services, but also have their services on other devices where they can partner with other companies, like we're seeing with some of their, we'll call them third-party releases, where they're partnering with Nintendo or Sony for select games. They just want to make the Xbox brand bigger. They don't want to be constrained to just their box. But we'll see if the gamble pays off for them. This is a long-term investment, and we're still in the early stages of it. Then had a $3 donation from Sala. Hi, Nate and MVG. If you had to bet, what will Nintendo officially call their next system? Switch 2? Super Switch? Or a new platform name entirely? Something like Nintendo Flip? We're probably only a few months away, so let's see who gets it right.
I have no idea, Nate, honestly. I really don't have any idea.
I'm going to go with the Nintendo...
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At the Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out the Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
Switcheroo.
I like it. Switcheroo.
I would love if they just went with Super Switch. You know, make Switch the brand, much like Nintendo used to just be the brand, and kind of have that, you know, Super Nintendo vibe to it. But it's hard to predict any type of naming convention from Nintendo.
The difficulty is if they have the Switch name, which they will, because they don't want to call it something completely different and lose people. But then if you put the name Switch in there, then you have to be very careful. That's not another Wii U situation where it's like, well,
right,
I already have a Switch. I already got Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers and Animal Crossing. So,
yeah, you'd have to make it very clear that it's a successor. It's its own platform. Like Switch 2 makes it obvious. This is a successor. Yeah. It's not just something. And you also have to factor in, will it have another unique gimmick that could play into the name?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I like to think the Switch is the brand itself at this point.
Yeah.
And that's where it's going to have some sort of, you know, two or something that follows it.
Yes.
But you can't do something silly like they did with the Wii U, where it wasn't clear. This is new hardware. Or even what you saw with the 3DS and the DS line, because they did so many revisions that it became kind of convoluted of exactly what is happening here. But thankfully, we haven't had that many revisions of the Switch. We just have the Switch Lite and the Switch OLED, and each are very clearly framed exactly what they are. So they should avoid that. But I think the safe guess at this point, Super Switch or Switch 2.
Yep.
Then had a dollar donation from Baker. There's a strong rumor going around that Microsoft will allow third parties, MSI, Acer, Gigabyte, etc., to make their own Xbox hardware. Do you think this could work? Would this allow Microsoft to exit the console business while still keeping Xbox alive?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because and maybe I'm a little short-sighted with my response here. But first of all, that particular model has been tried before. If you remember the days of the 3DO, where they tried to put 3DO on all sorts of different, you know, players and stuff, right? But let's just entertain the idea that Microsoft has partnered with these big hardware makers that could put Xbox hardware on their hardware, right? I think there's definitely something to be said about quality and standards, because developers don't want to be submitting games to all sorts of combinations of hardware slash monitor slash GPU slash CPU configurations. They want to have a lockdown environment where they know that there's only, well, in the case of Xbox, there's like two SKUs right now, right? But a handful of SKUs. They don't want to be having to mess with, a game that doesn't run well on a low-end Asus device or something like a, you know what I mean? So it's very difficult for me to imagine something like that happening, because when you submit your game to get certified, they have to test your game, which in turn means that they would have to test this like on like any number of devices that have Xbox hardware built into it. So I don't think so. I think ultimately Xbox still wants to have control over their hardware. Will they partner with these companies and will they provide, you know, chips and screens and bits and pieces for a potential, you know, new piece of Xbox hardware that Microsoft owns? Yes. But I personally can't see a company like Asus or MSI, you know, building a dedicated Xbox device unless it really falls under rigid specifications. But I personally can't see it. What do you think, though?
I think if they go it's going to be similar to what we've already seen on the market, where it's an Xbox licensed product. Like we saw, I think it was a couple of years ago, we saw Razer.
Yep.
Have that device where it's like, this works with Xbox Game Pass, something along those lines. But I think in terms of any handhelds, things like that, it's still going to be from Microsoft itself. I kind of feel, just my view, is that Microsoft is simply viewing the hardware industry different than they had previously, where they're not in that race to sell 100 million pieces of hardware anymore. It's to get their service, Game Pass, and their games into the hands of millions of people. So if they can come out and say, we're releasing a next-gen Xbox and we're going to release a handheld Xbox as well, and maybe our internal figures are 60 million, but because some of these games will go multi-platform and we want those games to sell 5, 6, 8 million copies, we're going to be more profitable than ever. The Xbox brand is going to be stronger than ever. It's just you have to kind of remove yourself from that console war mindset mm-hmm. of everything being in direct competition. And that's my hesitation of Microsoft ever fully walking away from hardware. I think they will always have a presence. And if they ever do collaborate with these types of companies, it's just going to be in that license sense that they have their brand on the box and that their service, Game Pass and such, is compatible with that specific piece of hardware. Because as you pointed out, it could be a compatibility nightmare where you have like, oh, Baldur's Gate 3, just as an example game, is on the Xbox. And now you had Asus make an Xbox handheld, but it has inferior specs to, like, let's say the Series S. So now that game doesn't run on it.
Yep.
It becomes a nightmare.
Yeah.
And you can't have that. You have to have some sense of control over the quality of the software running on that hardware. And I can't see Microsoft wanting to go in and validate half a dozen companies' offerings to say, okay, our full library works on this. It doesn't work on this. You have to work on that. Because at some point, it just becomes redundant and far too troublesome to even bother with.
I also feel like you're dangerously close to overlapping with PC at that point as well.
Right.
You have so many different configurations of PC. Steam does a good job of managing that for you. you know, if you provide some type of minimum specification and recommended specs, then things are good, right? So I don't know. I agree. I think Xbox, they're going to be around for a while when it comes to hardware. I don't see them handing that off to you know, any partners.
Then had a $1.33 donation from Frozen Cup. Do you think that Nintendo will release a new Pro Controller 2 with the new console, maybe with more advanced features like paddles, swappable sticks, etc., to rival Sony and Microsoft premium controllers? Or will they just keep selling the same one? Really going to come down to any new functionality that they could introduce with the controller for the Switch successor, whether or not they're going to innovate and release a new Pro Controller. But I would suspect that Nintendo will have a new standard controller with the Switch 2 when the system does release. Then had a $2 donation from Tom. Is it just me, or have Sony's first-party studios disappeared? Zero games in the most recent state of play, and we have no clue what the next Sony first-party title will be. If not for Insomniac, the PlayStation 5 first-party support would be almost non-existent. What is going on?
I think Sony's having a very difficult time right now, trying to basically reestablish that portfolio of first party games. But I will say this, I don't think their absence right now is going to last very long. I do think Sony will return and offer up some really compelling first party experiences. But I think really they're in a situation right now where they just really don't have much going on, whether that means they're just kind of in the middle of development on many first party games, which I think is the right thing to say. Like, I do feel like they are basically in the lab working on a bunch of things right now. But unfortunately, we're just in that situation where they don't really have much to show us this year. But I think we'll start to see that kind of turnaround slowly going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, as development times take longer for games to be made, we're going to hit these lulls in terms of releases and announcements. And when you look at some of Sony's first-party output, you could see games from studios like Sony Santa Monica or even Sucker Punch, where these games are coming out in 2019, 2020. And now it feels as though they haven't done anything in so long as we get into 2024. And when you look at the start of the PlayStation 5 generation, you had a number of big first-party studios release games. And now those studios are just, they're in the middle of a new development cycle. So they're not going to have anything potentially ready for this generation. Insomniac has definitely been a highlight of the PlayStation 5 generation to this point. And they're just very efficient. They are able to crank out a game in about 3 to 4 years. And you know, we've had Miles Morales, we've Spider-Man 2, we have Wolverine coming out, which I believe is slated for, what, 2025 or is it 2026 based on the leak? And that's a very efficient studio. And you had Ratchet and Clank as well in 2021. It's just these other studios are making just much bigger games. And when you look at some of their timelines, they should be nearing a point where they could announce a new project. It's just going to come down to when does Sony want to announce that project from that studio. I mean, we're definitely at a point in time where Sucker Punch should be able to announce Ghost of Tsushima 2. When will they do it? There's a lot of rumor going around that they could have a Sony PlayStation showcase in, you know, May. Or I believe it's May or June. That's the rumor going around. So that would be a good venue for Microsoft or for Sony to really demonstrate and give announcements of some of their upcoming first party games, because that's what people are really, really dying to learn about. And even if 2024 is void and absent of any first party or major first party games, Sony can get away with it because they happen to make a lot of exclusive third party dealings like Silent Hill 2, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, Stellar Blade, things like that, where they feel as though they are important to the PlayStation identity, or even Rise of the Ronin, which just came out. Those things help bolster that library and the offerings for the PlayStation brand. So Sony kind of has an allowance to get away with not having significant first party releases or even announcements within a certain time frame. But I definitely get the frustration of, where are the announcements, Sony? We're waiting. And when you look at 2023, you had a bunch of rumors going into that, you know, that showcase where people were saying Sony's going to show phase two of what's coming from their studios. Yeah. And we saw a lot of games as a service, like Concord and the game from Jade Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely wasn't the showcase people wanted. People wanted to see, where's that long rumored, I think it even leaked, with the God of War DLC. Where is Sucker Punch? Where Ghost of Tsushima 2? What's Naughty Dog up to beyond The Last of Us Factions, which back then it was still in development. Now we know it's been canceled. So there's a lot of stuff Sony can begin to show or even announce. It's just a question of, when is the right time? They're definitely in that position of, they don't want to announce a game 2 or 3 years out from release. They're keeping things closer to their chest because they don't need to get you hyped for something 2 years out. They're holding it until it's a little closer to release to have that shorter marketing cycle. So hopefully in the next couple of months, we get a better look at what Sony has in the pipeline. But I'm definitely there with you of, I want to see what's next from these big studios that Sony has under their umbrella, and see what's next for a lot of these franchises, or what new ideas Sony has for us this generation. Because up to this point, this generation really does feel like it's just a continuation of the PlayStation 4 generation. And that's not a bad thing, but it's also not all that exciting. Then had a $1.50 donation from DSM. I hate to say it, but we are witnessing the slow death of the Xbox brand, and Microsoft has no one else but themselves to blame. They want to maximize short-term profits by putting games everywhere, which destroys the Xbox value proposition. Sad times.
I think some of these questions were submitted during the period of time when Xbox was about to announce their plans.
Yeah, it predates them.
So there was obviously a lot of emotion and a lot of, you know, confused and unhappy people. Look, I don't think Xbox is going to go away. I don't think we're witnessing the demise of Xbox anytime soon. I think, like you said, Nate, they're playing the long game here. The long game is, they want to be around in 10, 15, 20 years from now. They want their games available everywhere. Whether this long game that they're playing will bear fruit for them, we don't know that. But it seems like they're putting all the things in place to prepare themselves for a very long Xbox future. So I don't agree that Xbox is kind of slowly becoming irrelevant.
Yeah, when I see a lot of people say, oh, the Xbox brand is dying, I disagree. I think it's in the middle of a renaissance. I think it's being reborn. Yeah. And we have to see the new direction that Xbox takes. But yeah, I am still very excited for the future of Xbox and 2024, especially with the lineup of games we know coming this year. And 2025 is going to have some fantastic games. So is 2026.
Agree.
The pipeline is set. Let's see what Microsoft brings their June showcase in terms of software announcements, because I think that showcase could be one of the best showcases Microsoft has put on in the better part of a decade.
Yeah, and I also want to add, this doesn't make us fanboys either. You know, like, because we're kind of saying that Xbox is going to be around for a long time, that doesn't mean that I'm a big Xbox fanboy and I love the brand and whatnot. I have a lot of questions and concerns about Xbox as a brand going forward. I'm seeing the old digital future unveiled before our very eyes, and it really worries me as someone that is big on physical media. But to say that Xbox is becoming irrelevant and they're slowly starting to, you know, fade away, I don't think that's true. I think Xbox, like you said, Nate, is going to have a very strong couple of years, and hopefully for their sake, at least, they set themselves up for future success, which I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to, as I said in a prior question, you have to start viewing the Xbox beyond just the console. You have to view Xbox as a brand, which is Game Pass, software. It's not just hardware. And that's where Xbox's future as just an overall brand is going to be bright. We just have to wait to get to the point where it can shine and Microsoft can illustrate. We are now one of the biggest publishers in gaming. We also have hardware. We also have services. Where you play our games, we don't care. You have a variety of options. You can play it on our ecosystem with our hardware and handheld, or you can play it on Nintendo, PlayStation, or PC. The choice is yours. But at the end of the day, you are invested in the Xbox brand. It's just a little differently than you would have been invested going back to the original Xbox or the 360 or even the Xbox One. And that's good. It's showing growth. It's also showing Microsoft is willing to adapt to a changing industry. And it's a gamble. They're either going to be ahead of the curve or it's going to be detrimental. But right now, I think they are looking with some good foresight into we have to adapt or we die.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, it comes down to as a consumer, you don't have to like what they're doing. But I think from a business sense, what they are doing is going to prove very profitable and lucrative for them in the long term. Then had a $3 donation from OniLink97. Hey, Nate and MVG, hope you are both doing well. Regarding Fire Emblem 4 Remake, do you believe it will be announced in the upcoming Nintendo Direct? I am assuming it will occur some point this month. Or would they want to wait until after Switch 2 was revealed to show it?
Well, that Direct has already come and gone.
And it was a partner Direct.
So we have the benefit of hindsight.
I mean, Fire Emblem 4 Remake, to my knowledge, is just waiting for Nintendo to announce it. So hopefully it is in the next general Direct, but it's just waiting for Nintendo to officially announce it and give it a release date. When that Direct and that announcement takes place, I cannot say. So Nintendo, please just do it already. Something with the number 4, Nintendo just doesn't seem to want to announce anything that hasn't.
Yeah, Metroid.
Then he had a dollar donation from Garbear. My last donation is already outdated. I thought it was just Hi-Fi Rush, but now they are selling the whole barn. Anyways, just want to donate and ask what you guys think is most valuable in life. Have a great day.
What's most valuable in life? Happiness. Hands down. Hands down, happiness for me is the most valuable commodity in life. If I'm not happy, I'm having a bad day, and everyone around me is having a bad day.
Yeah, happiness, I think, is the go-to answer there. I mean, happiness, and I would say time.
Yeah.
You have to understand that your time is finite, and you have to make the most of the time you have. So having that realization or that understanding that time isn't forever is what makes you appreciate what you do have in life and the time you have in life to do what you want, do what you enjoy, spread love, spread happiness, spread joy, enjoy what life has to offer you. Then had a dollar donation from Kazmaroon. With Xbox's hardware demise looking increasingly inevitable, it opens the door for new players to compete for space under the TV. Could you see Valve releasing a Steam Deck Pro with a powerful AMD APU as a console to fill the void left by Xbox?
No, there's not going to be a void left by Xbox. Valve has already tried Steam machines and various hardware bits and pieces. They've already dabbled in this space. I don't think so. I think Valve is probably going to continue to iterate on the Steam Deck because obviously that has been very successful for them. But I can't see Valve kind of replacing an Xbox hardware in our living rooms anytime soon, personally.
Agreed. And the demise of Xbox is not going to be anything in the near future. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about that. Xbox is still committed to next generation hardware. So we're good until the early 2030s. And I'm not going to worry about what will happen in 2040. Because by then, I'm going to be very old and probably not caring anymore. Then had a $3 donation from Crash FM. With the 20th anniversary of Burnout 3 Takedown coming up, what are the chances of a remaster? I would even pay extra for the soundtrack to come back.
I'm going
to
say very high because I want to will it into the universe.
Man, that's as good an answer as any.
I love Burnout 3 Takedown. What a great game that is.
It was a great game. I would definitely would love to see them bring that back. So I will go with you and will it into existence. Then had a $1 donation from Liam Werner. If Xbox is starting to heavily move games to other platforms, what are the odds we get Viva Pinata on Switch now? Even just a re-release of the second one would be amazing. I agree. That would be amazing if Viva Pinata could come to Switch. And I will this into reality, much like MVG is trying to will Burnout 3 into reality.
I like it. Can we take it a step further and say Rare Replay on the Switch?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Excellent.
Then had a $3 donation from KJ Superstar. Hi, Nate and MVG. Hope you guys are having a great day. And do you think there's a chance we can see Xenoblade Chronicle X on Switch 2, perhaps?
I mean, perhaps we could see.
I mean, perhaps. Yeah, perhaps we could. I mean,
I'm not a Xenoblade guy, so the question's a little wasted on me, but, you know, I've heard.
Say never say never. You know, never say never, but we'll see. I mean, in my opinion, I'd rather see Monolith really focus on some new ideas, and they've told their story. Mm-hmm. Now go with like a new IP and create something new going into a new generation rather than revisit something. But I get the idea that it is trapped on the Wii U. It would be great if it could come to another system so more people could play it. So for your sake, with your question, I hope we see Xenoblade Chronicles X find itself on more modern hardware and make people happy. Then had a $3 donation from Waifu for Life. Hi, guys. My predictions for the Switch 2. No Joy-Cons, better built-in controller, and no docks. Just an HDMI dongle that you plug into your TV, and the Switch 2 will transmit wirelessly with unnoticeable input lag. Cheers.
I'm a big fan of no input lag.
I also like no Joy-Cons. I know that's controversial, but I'm fine without having the detachable Joy-Con idea where it's just...
Me too. I mean, I use my Pro Controller probably about 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
Joy-Cons are kind of wasted on me. Nintendo bundles in, you know, a standard controller with a system, and when you undock it, you play it like a Switch Lite. I'm okay with that. And if you have the current Joy-Cons, let's say it's compatible with the Switch 2 for undocked play, that's a nice little avenue. I mean, obviously, when it comes to accessories, Nintendo wants to be able to sell as many accessories as they can. So the Joy-Con is a very lucrative business venture. But, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a no Joy-Con type of system. But I also wouldn't be shocked to see if Joy-Cons are, in fact, still there either. Then had a $1 donation from Gideon. So Microsoft releases a next-gen Xbox. By then, people are conditioned to playing many Xbox games on PlayStation or Switch. Sales then get even worse. Why would developers support a console that's selling maybe 500,000 units per quarter? That's the risk for Microsoft.
I mean, we've already kind of concluded that it's probably not going to be that dire. I mean, I know that there was a lot of emotion that was going around when all this stuff kind of broke about a month ago or whatever. Look, as a company that does and doesn't put games on Xbox, sometimes we don't because we know that we're simply not going to make money on whatever the, you know, we're trying to put on this on the platform. It's a lot more complicated than just saying, well, you know, less sales, Xbox is kind of diluting their brand, so no one's going to buy Xbox games anymore. I think it's a lot more complicated than just saying that. There are games and franchises out there that people that are invested in Xbox will buy. It's really just a matter of, you know, identifying which ones are the ones that will sell. So I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, there's obviously a lot of doom and gloom around Xbox right now. But again, you know, we did talk about their future plans and what we think they're going to do over the next 10 years. I think Xbox, again, they have their plan, they have their vision, they're going to execute on it. It's very difficult to say whether or not it's going to be successful for them. We have to basically wait and see what the future brings.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of those issues that you raise in the question, that is an issue for Microsoft to solve, not a consumer or a fan.
Yep.
They have to make their platform, you know, attractive to development partners. They have to prove that there's an audience for their game and be able to say, make sure you do support us because we can give you sales. That's all things for Microsoft to solve moving forward. And I really just don't believe the idea that bringing select games to PlayStation and Nintendo is going to have people conditioned to the point of not buying an Xbox.
No.
If you really want to look at something to illustrate that point, I think you could look at PC right now, where individuals who may have invested in the original Xbox or even Xbox 360 aren't buying Xbox hardware now to play these games like a Starfield, Halo Infinite, Forza, because those games are day and date on PC. And a lot of those individuals likely have PCs that are more powerful than an Xbox Series X in terms of performance, where they're getting, you know, better resolution or better performance. So Microsoft has already conditioned a certain segment of the gaming audience to not have to buy their hardware just by supporting games on PC day one. And I do wonder, and I have speculated this in the past, whether or not Microsoft may have underestimated the impact of having day and date PC releases and how it would impact their hardware sales. Maybe they didn't anticipate that there was such a large percentage of Xbox gamers who had also primarily gamed on PC, and they essentially negated their need of investing in the Xbox hardware ecosystem. And now that reality is setting in, and this is where Microsoft is trying to make some pivots. Then had a $2 donation from Hawkeye Now. Sony recently migrated Funimation into Crunchyroll, and in doing so, they erase and fail to honor all digital purchases of Funimation users. I have to admit, I am now questioning Sony's commitment to my digital library on my PlayStation in the future.
I think this is going to be one of those situations where, unfortunately, due to the digital ecosystem that we are now a part of, we're slowly starting to migrate into that. We're going to see things like this happen, unfortunately. I don't know what the answer is. Nate, you know, people that follow me know that I'm a big proponent of physical media. I've always felt like, you know, physical media is true ownership of a product. I actually have it in my possession, in my hand. No one's going to come to my house and steal the product from me when the license expires. So I don't know what the answer is. All I can say is that's where things are heading, and it's probably not the last time something like this happens.
We then had a $1 donation from a bag of chips. What are your thoughts on a Zelda remaster being a Switch 2 launch window game, say Ocarina of Time full remake or Breath of the Wild remaster, something like Ocarina of Time remade in the same way as Final Fantasy VII Remake Rebirth? Sounds like the thing of dreams. If you've played Rebirth, you would not be saying that.
I was going to say.
That's a harsh thing to say.
if they just gave Ocarina of Time a modern upgrade with a new engine and left everything intact, I would be more than happy. If they gave us a Resident Evil 2 remake type approach, Very happy.
I think that would be the angle they would have to go with an Ocarina of Time remake, as it's closer to Resident Evil 2. Because my thing with Ocarina of Time, that when you look back at it, you know, we grew up with that, let's call it what it is, antiquated design.
Yep.
Those who have played Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, when you go back to something like an Ocarina of Time in terms of design, it's going to feel very restrictive. Yep. You're not going to get that sense of wonder that we did, because remember, that game was very early in the 3D era. Mm-hmm. When you went to Hyrule Field that first time, even if you just watched the title screen of Ocarina of Time, that was a revelation.
Oh my God. Yes.
It was wow. Yep. So if Nintendo were ever to remake Ocarina of Time, I think they have to go that Resident Evil 2 path. I don't want them to do, you know, the Final Fantasy VII remake rebirth angle where all of a sudden Ganondorf is your brother or something.
Yeah, yeah, they just change the story and make it ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's just Ocarina in time and name only.
Turn it into terrible fan fiction.
But, I mean, Ocarina of Time on the 3DS was a fantastic remaster, whatever they want to, you know, quantify that one as. But I also feel, because that predates that shift in the Zelda franchise in terms of game direction, you could get away with it then. I just, man, it's hard because I'm so conflicted, because I would love to play Ocarina of Time with like modern visuals.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an amazing game that, let's be honest, runs like hot garbage.
Hey, that 20 frames a second.
It's not good. And look, I'm the world's biggest N64 fan, but that game, it needs something. It needs something.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've all seen the Unreal Engine 5 asset drops showing Ocarina of Time, and I'll be honest, they all look terrible.
They do. None of them look good.
No. And, like, yeah, I would love Ocarina of Time remade. It just has to be done the right way. And I don't know what the right way would be, that you're able to cater to the new Zelda fan who came in with Breath of the Wild, with Breath of the Wild being their Ocarina of Time, and then us with Ocarina of Time being our Ocarina of Time.
I think the difficult part is when you give a developer an Unreal Engine 5 tech stack, the first thought is to make something look really realistic. As realistic as possible, you know, add significant fidelity, you know, make sure that the surrounding landscapes look photorealistic. And that is kind of the wrong approach, I feel like, to remake a game like Ocarina of Time. So you're right. I think most of the things that I've seen, the fan-made kind of vertical slices, whatever you want to call them, just don't look very good. There's a lot lost in translation there for me.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing. But I mean, if Nintendo were to remake Ocarina of Time in some fantastic fashion, and they could have that as a launch game of the Switch 2, I would definitely be there day one. A Breath of the Wild remaster, I would say of the two, would probably have the higher likelihood. And I'll be honest, I probably wouldn't be there day one to replay Breath of the Wild. It's a fantastic game. I love what it did. But I'm not necessarily that hungry to revisit it with just better visuals and performance. I think I would need something significant to really get me to go back in and restart the game from the beginning. Yeah. Because so much of the wonder of that game was the first time, having to climb the mountain for the first time and figure out, how do I stay warm? Oh, yeah. I could use a torch and light it on fire. I could eat hot peppers, or I could get some sort of, you know, heavy t-shirt or coat for Link, and that's how I could survive. It was all that, wow, first time wonder. And revisiting that, I think a lot of that magic would kind of wear off, whereas it's nostalgia talking. I will acknowledge that. Ocarina of Time just wows me every time I play it. Then had a question from Quilt Om of a dollar. why do Sony and Microsoft keep pushing cloud gaming? It's pricey for them to host hardware to run the service, and for users, we get input lag and compression. Doesn't offer same conveniences as going physical to digital. Just play now versus wait 5 minutes for a download.
Goes back to what we were saying about Xbox. They literally want their games accessible from everything. And this is just another kind of tool in the arsenal to provide that. I do agree. Cloud has limitations. It has its own issues, mostly dependent on people's internet connections. But we also have to remember there are other countries in the world that have far superior internet speeds than the United States. We're definitely not anywhere near the leader as far as internet and cloud computing goes. But at the end of the day, they just want to offer their games to more customers. So if you have a TV that has, you know, the xCloud available to it, then all you need is Microsoft, all you need is a controller and you don't need any hardware. So it's just another option of many that they provide.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just a secondary complementary option for individuals to use at their convenience to maybe test something out and see if they like the game. Essentially a risk-free rental where you're not committing any download time to have to wait. You just have that instant access. Say, okay, I really like this game. Now I'll download it. Or also have access to your library anywhere you go. I agree. It's not a viable playing option at the moment for the majority of games, but it is interesting technology that hopefully is able to mature and maybe one day, be it 2120, it is a actual means of deliverable. But for now, it's much like VR. It's a good idea and concept that just fails to really reach mass appeal and just isn't able to deliver exactly what the technology hopes to achieve. It's still far too early. It needs to mature. Then had a dollar donation from KJ. After 7 years, we have just a few more months left in the Switch's life before the new console comes out, and we didn't get a single new Donkey Kong or Star Fox game during that time. Hard to believe, and honestly pretty sad at the mismanagement of these IPs.
We could still get a Donkey Kong game, right? I mean, we still don't really know about the back half of this year.
That's true.
We know a couple of things, but...
Hey, I still hold hope that they will one day port Star Fox Zero over to the Switch or Switch 2 because that game needs more love. It was not as bad as people think.
It absolutely does. Let's roll that into the universe as well, along with Burnout 3.
And Viva Pinata Switch.
And Viva Pinata Switch.
I don't know if we have that much power to will the universe.
We probably don't, but maybe one of those three things will hit.
We've tapped out. Then had a $5 donation from No Fruit Snacks for You. Just want to send some love to my boys. Twitter has been a shit show this week. Hope you have a great, great weekend. Thank you. Then had a $5 donation from Ride the Walrus. PC anti-cheat. What are your thoughts on anti-cheat, and should there be regulation, oversight, or protection from these third-party companies, something along the lines of driver signing or other accreditation?
Yes. So anti-cheat is something that doesn't sit well with me because I will say that I'm not an expert in anti-cheat technology, but my understanding is with most anti-cheats out there that you have to install a kernel level driver, which, you know, if you have that level of access, the driver then can potentially do some damage to your system. I'm not saying that any of these companies are being malicious. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. All I'm saying is if you want to have anti-cheat, then you have to accept some type of end-user license agreement that it's going to install some piece of software with escalated privileges that could potentially cause some damage, right? There was a story recently about, I believe, Apex Legends. You may have heard the story, Nate, about there was some Apex Legends event going on where someone was remote hacking into one of the players. Did you hear about this story? So the anti-cheat clearly had... Now, the anti-cheat was not to blame as far as I know, but they also haven't really like come up with an explanation as to what exactly happened there. So look, my thing about anti-cheat is I do think it's something that is required in games because, I mean, Nate and I, we play Xbox Live a lot. We play Call of Duty and WWE and Halo and Rainbow Six. I will say that we've definitely come across people that cheat in various games, and it's frustrating. But I feel like there has to be another way to detect cheating rather than installing some piece of software on your PC that has escalated privileges, because nothing should ever really be doing that.
Then had a dollar donation from Liam Warner. Is your speculation if Nintendo ditching detachable controllers guesswork or based off something you heard? Just speculation and opinion. Then had a dollar donation from CCM Roar 57. As of right now, who do you think releases a true portable version of their console first, Xbox or PlayStation? Also, between Steam Deck 2 handheld PCs and portable Xbox or PlayStation, Nintendo will have much more competition this time around. I think of the two consoles, I go with Xbox.
Yeah, I agree. I think Xbox seems like everything, all signs kind of point to that. So yeah, we'll probably hear about some Xbox handheld at some point.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, so Nintendo is definitely going to have more competition, be it the Steam Deck, handheld PCs, and a portable Xbox. Of those, I'd say the portable Xbox may be the most direct competition, just because depending on how Microsoft approaches the Xbox handheld, will it have physical media? Is it going to use game cards, or is it going to be a digital-only device? It's also going to come down to pricing, performance, battery life. But if they can come up with a fairly priced system that, let's say, is comparable to an Xbox Series S in terms of performance, and if it has physical media, just as a hypothetical here, it's definitely going to be a thing that could lure people towards it, because Microsoft would have Game Pass on it. You'd have just a large library of older Xbox games as well as the current gen games on it. It becomes a very appealing platform, and it's a platform I would be there day one, and I say this as a person who was there day one to buy a PlayStation Portal, which I still use almost daily.
I use my Portal a lot. Take it with me when I travel. It's a good device.
Little thing.
It's not perfect. Yeah. It has its issues, but it's good.
Yeah, but if you could give me a native handheld for these systems, be it the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series, and I can play my library of games in my leisure, be it sitting on the couch, outside, or traveling, I'll definitely be there. And I think Microsoft is going to go that route in the next year or so, and it's going to be a very interesting move for them, because that can lead to a nice little, you know, piece of that portable pie. And we know how invested they are right now in courting Japanese support from studios like Sega and Atlas, Square Enix. So you can now have a product in Japan that Japan likes. Japan likes portable systems. So all of a sudden, there's kind of that second wind of, are you going to be able to sell in regions you may have struggled with a traditional home console? So it's an interesting time if they go that route. And honestly, I've said it before, I think all the console manufacturers have to have a handheld device to complement a stationary traditional home console, because that's where the market is today. You have a lot of competition for your time, not just in gaming, but entertainment as a whole. You have commute. You have children who have basically been conditioned into a mobile market due to cell phone gaming and such. So you need to have that secondary handheld SKU to appeal to the taste of gamers worldwide. So it's just a matter of time before I think Sony would invest in that more fully than they did with the PlayStation Portal. But of the two, I think Microsoft will be the first to have an Xbox handheld hit the market. Then had a $2 donation from Torpedo Tuna. Do you know of or foresee any major improvements being made to the NSO service? It is insane how far behind Nintendo is compared to Sony and Microsoft on both features and quality of the service. eShop and online Switch play feels like it's from 2007.
I do think that they'll continue to iterate on the NSO service. There's probably going to be new systems that get added to that service, whether that is on current generation hardware or next generation, I couldn't say. But the platform is there, the base is there, they've already done some stuff. I don't think N64 is the end of NSO. I think there'll be more systems added over time.
Yeah, NSO will continue to evolve and grow. In terms of features, I mean, it really comes down to what does Nintendo feel comfortable putting on it. We still don't have any native voice chat for basically any games. We have no onboard messaging system or anything like that. And that feels like a very deliberate decision. So yep, I'd be kind of surprised to see Nintendo introduce those types of features. But NSO, in terms of software offerings, will continue to grow. Nintendo will add, you know, new hardware and software and such, because that's really their main appeal of being able to justify charging you for online and cloud saves. So they have to continue to iterate on it and improve it. But for the Switch generation, I think we're likely towards the end of any true growth on NSO. The bigger question would be when Switch 2 comes, and let's just say in this theoretical conversation, Switch 2 NSO has GameCube, would that also be included on the Switch, or would that be exclusive to the Switch 2 and any other future hardware? So let's just say they added the Dreamcast or something like that. Would that be exclusive to Switch 2 hardware, or would it also go to the Switch? So that could be a selling point for them if they keep it exclusive to a specific hardware. But yeah, NSO will grow, but I'm not aware of anything in the immediate. Then had a $2.55 donation from Coffee Time. And then Nintendo needs to prepare for a huge increase in handheld gaming competition with the Switch 2. It will be going up against Steam Deck 2, a ton of PC gaming handhelds, and likely portable PlayStation and Xbox. Switch 2 Pro will need to be a thing this time around.
I mean, you're not wrong. I think Nintendo's new hardware will need to impress. And I think it will at the end of the day. I think, you know, Nintendo's obviously learned a lot about hybrid hardware since the Switch. So I think whatever comes next will be competitive.
Yeah, definitely be competitive with what is going to be on the market. By collaborating with a company like NVIDIA, you are ensuring you're going to have a top-of-the-line mobile chip, especially with a very advanced technologies like DLSS and such, and even ray tracing. The idea of a Switch 2 Pro, obviously it is far too early to speculate or discuss something like that, but I see the point you're trying to raise here, that as the portable PC market continues to grow and we see updates on those types of hardware almost annually, that Nintendo will eventually be outclassed during the generation, and there may be that need of, let's be competitive what is on the market. So, you know, a revision, definitely something that Nintendo could consider, but considering we're looking into the future of something around 2029 at this point, really hard to say whether or not they would do that style of revision. But technology is advancing quick. Mobile technology is definitely advancing exceptionally quick. So if there is a need for a Switch 2 Pro style revision, given advancements to the mobile PC market or the introduction of a PlayStation or Xbox handheld, then Nintendo will definitely have to take that under advisement and consider bringing something to market if they feel any pressure from those various competitors. Then had a dollar donation from Royu. Hi, Nate, and really enjoy your podcast. Thanks to you and MVG for providing me with entertainment and information on my long commutes. What are you most excited as we enter a new generation of hardware with Nintendo? Thanks. Just new games. New ideas, innovations, and just to see what Nintendo can do with some of their franchises, what franchises and IPs they may bring back. And, I mean, it really just comes down to the innovations and creativity Nintendo can do with what they're going to offer. it's not necessarily related solely to the hardware itself, but it's really just the software and getting those new tools and having advancements in the hardware and power and what is possible to see how Nintendo takes advantage of it and delivers new ways to play.
Agree. It's always been about the games.
Then had a dollar donation from Oriyazu349. Do you think ads in games will ever become the norm? There was some speculation that Microsoft will add ads to Game Pass big games, basically auto-pausing, suspending games while you play to stream in ads. People would never accept this, right? Right?
I think there's always going to be different things tested. Ads are always going to be tested in games in some fashion. Because publishers can't help themselves. They want to make money. They want to make money in many different ways. So if there is a way to put ads in video games that is not, number one, predatory, number two, intrusive in such a way that it does take you out of the experience, then I think they'll do it. I mean, ads in games is not a new thing. There's been ads in games for many, many years. So yes, I think, you know, publishers are going to continue to try to find ways to just sneak ads into games one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not they're going to be as aggressive as used in your question, or if it's going to be more of a subliminal type of marketing where, let's just say, Grand Theft Auto 6 or you're playing a Forza Horizon game and there's a billboard for Duracell batteries or McDonald's or something, it's really going to come down to how it's implemented. We already have ads on dashboards now when you turn on systems to a certain extent. So they're definitely trying to find this means to find extra revenue, and advertisers are always looking for a way to advertise a product further. I mean, think back to the 360. We literally had Burger King games. That was just an ad, truth. But they had achievements, so people bought the Burger King games by going to Burger King.
I miss those games.
Do you, though?
Sneaking. It's a good time.
Then had a dollar donation from John Harker. Today we got news of Sony wanting to improve margins with multi-platform releases. Do you see them ever doing day one PC releases for first party, or even releasing their first party games on Xbox at some point? Of those two, I think we will see them do day one PC releases of select first party games. We just saw Helldivers 2 be a day one release on PC and PlayStation, and that has been a huge success, especially on PC for them. And it's kind of just led to a boom for sales, because now PlayStation fans are also interested in the game and there's a huge playing base with it. As for bringing games to Xbox, I think it's going to be a case of it depends on the game. It depends what product Sony is bringing to market and whether or not the Xbox is a good platform for it. I wouldn't dismiss the idea outright, because this industry is changing by the minute. So if it is a financial option that Sony sees as beneficial for, let's say, a live service game, I think it could happen. I don't think it's something that they are necessarily exploring in the moment. I think PC is more of their focus right now and trying to capitalize on bringing more of their games to PC to strong sales and eventually working their way to that day and date release on PC and potentially even having a PlayStation launcher on PC. But maybe in a 5 years from now, we do see a PlayStation game on Xbox, not counting MLB The Show.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on this one. MLB The Show aside, because obviously there's contractual reasons why that's day and date on Xbox. Mm-hmm. I think this is where arrogant Sony starts to emerge. I don't feel like the current management at Sony will ever want to see their games on Xbox, personally. Outside of live service games, maybe you're right. Maybe there will be an opportunity for that. I just feel like Sony would never put their games on Xbox if they can help it. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the thing. If Sony just continues to see such minimal margins on their games that they're going to eventually have to recognize we have to expand, we have to do something new. And whether that's bring a game or games to a Nintendo system or an Xbox system, I think they really just have to have that conversation. But I mean, it's tough to tell the direction that the industry is going to go in. And it comes back to that direction Microsoft is taking. Microsoft is already looking at that, saying this is the change we have to make. It's just a question of, will Sony and Nintendo ever have to have that conversation as well? Then had a dollar donation from Torrid. Is Sony about to go down the same path as Microsoft by slowly releasing their games on other platforms on day one? The success of Helldivers 2 on Steam makes me think they will soon adopt a day one PC strategy for all their first party games as well.
Just, yeah, same, really the same response as before. I think they will do select live service games day and date on PC. But the conversation about bringing their games to Xbox, I don't think that's going to be a thing for a while.
Then had a $2.01 donation from Dino Gummy Snack. How does Endless Ocean get brand new game before Eternal Darkness, Golden Sun, Advance Wars, or Wave Race? I don't understand Nintendo.
It's a great question. I would love to see Eternal Darkness, Wave Race, Golden Sun. I'd love to see those games come back. I don't really know. They must have better data than what we do.
Well, I guess the development teams of those games are likely busy on other things, or they no longer exist in the case of Eternal Darkness. Even Wave Race, I'm not even sure if that development team is still around. But, I mean, it would be great to see, you know, Golden Sun come back. We hopefully, you know, Camelot or Nintendo can find another studio to take that on. You know, maybe something like Monolith Soft would be a good idea. They tend to make RPGs, Nintendo. But Wave Race would be fantastic, especially on modern day systems. Nintendo's always an interesting company when it comes to certain decisions, but they probably do have some market research suggesting they're not going to see significant sales from, you know, Wave Race or an Eternal Darkness. Advance Wars did come out with the Way Forward developed release that was delayed for over a year, and I don't think sales for that particular release were all that strong, so I wouldn't be surprised if Advance Wars takes another long sleep.
Yep.
Then had a $1 donation from Fosmic. What are your lifetime sales predictions for Switch 2? Very unlikely to do as well as Switch. I'm thinking 90 to 100 million total. Still good when you consider historical Nintendo console sales. And do you think Nintendo will ever embrace putting games on PC?
100 million and no.
To your second question, no. As for lifetime sales predictions of the Switch 2, really can't do one right now. We don't know exactly what the system is, what its gimmick will be. So it's a little too early to give any type of sales predictions. If it is just, let's say it's called Switch 2, the brand is still very positive, so that will definitely lead to some strong sales out of the gate, but far too early to give any thoughts on sales projections of a system that we have yet to see be formally announced. Then had a dollar donation from Pal World is Fun. Nintendo seems to be planning a bunch of exclusive Switch 2 titles at launch or within first 6 months, an immediate break from Switch, unlike Microsoft and Sony, which had long cross-gen. Thoughts on the strategy with an immediate transition versus long cross-gen? I mean, right now it still remains to be seen what type of cross-gen original period we're going to be seeing between the Switch and the Switch 2. There will obviously be some crossover with likely smaller releases. I would imagine any significant AAA type releases Nintendo is penning exclusively for the Switch 2, but there'll still be a cross-gen period of anywhere from 12 to 18 months, I'd reckon. Microsoft and Sony definitely had a very long cross-gen period with significant games, Gran Turismo 7, God of War Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West. And then you had, you know, Microsoft's output very similar to that, going well into 3 years on the market. Nintendo likely will not replicate that but Nintendo will have a cross-gen period of a certain amount with smaller games, and it should benefit the Switch 2 significantly by just having those big exclusive releases early on, because that's really what you need to set a tone for your platform. And I think that's plays a large part in why the PlayStation Xbox Series just feel as though they are continuations of their predecessors rather than feel like new things. So ideally, the Switch 2 is able to feel like a brand new experience that evolves what the Switch offered and not just a continuation of what the Switch was. Then had a $5 donation from Adrian. Hey, Nate and MVG, after the fantastic Dark Forces remaster, where the hell is Rogue Squadron? MVG, can you and LRG please bring the series to Switch? Julian Egbrecht said multiple times he wants to bring it to Switch. Please pull some strings.
I would love to see Rogue Squadron come out again on the Switch. That would be awesome. Unfortunately, I have no idea about what's going on with that game.
I mean, ideally, at this point, I'd want to see it on like the Switch 2 as a launch game with just crazy visuals. Because when it came to the when it was on the GameCube, that was that moment of like, whoa, look at this leap from the N64. This looks way better than anything on PlayStation 2. Try to replicate that on new hardware. That could be an exciting type of launch. You would just need a partner with a really good studio to do it. So if those titles are ever to happen, don't pick Aspyre. Then had a $2.22 donation from Jollypop. Do you think the era of big acquisitions are over? With so many job cuts across the industry, it seems like we are entering a new era where Microsoft and Sony aren't going to be too keen on making any more big studio acquisitions for a very long time.
In general, I do think that acquisitions will slow up this year, but there's always going to be new acquisitions that occur. Nintendo, you know, they'll just pull something out of the hat that we don't even see coming. But yeah, this is usually pretty cyclical. There'll be a period where companies are spending money and buying up studios, and then there'll be periods where it's heads down focused on you know, the studios that you already have. And of course, there's always the, you know, the threat of layoffs. But I do think that the buying acquisition phase that was so prevalent last year and the year before is slowing up this year. There'll be some new acquisitions that happen because there's always going to be acquisitions. But I do agree that things are slowing up.
Yeah, I think acquisitions at this point would be, you know, smaller, more affordable companies that wouldn't require any lengthy litigation and investigation of whether or not it's, you know, a monopoly and stuff like that. So it'd be smaller studios, I think, at this point. Then had a dollar donation from Soren23. It seems undeniable at this point that Steam is the best gaming platform on the planet. The sheer amount of games, the features, community, great support from Valve, and gets all Xbox games day one and many Sony games later on.
I mean, Steam is a great platform, no doubt about it. I think more people are starting to embrace it. The Steam Deck has definitely helped make Steam more available to many other people that may have not been invested in PC gaming and Steam previously. It's been around for a very long time. I mean, Steam originated when Half-Life 2 released back in 2004. It's mature. It's been around. It's road tested. It's got all the hallmarks of an environment that is going to be around for many, many years to come.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I personally don't use Steam, but I definitely see its strong attributes. Then had a $1.99 donation from Torkoal. It feels like Sony went all in on live service games, and now they seem to be backtracking. Last of Us Online shutdown, Spider-Man Games as a Service shutdown, Twisted Metal live service canceled. But Jim Ryan retiring, is PlayStation now doing a course correction? On the surface, it definitely feels that way. It seems as though they were looking at what's working for them, and they're looking at projects that are either struggling or that they may no longer view as viable, and they are canceling the deadweight projects and allocating those resources to other things. But yeah, it definitely feels as though they are entering a significant pivot from the Jim Ryan era.
Yep, I agree.
Then had a $25 donation from Super MarCFX5D. The insider gaming Moore's Law PlayStation 5 Pro leaks crossed the line for me. If legit, why would someone disclose, think they must show this to a YouTube publication? Too many affected by gaming industry layoffs who know better are better looking for work.
I don't really know what to say to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Yup basically says it all. Then had a $2 donation from Rue. What are your predictions for which Nintendo franchises get major new releases within the first 18 months of the Switch 2's life? I'd say...
Can I say Metroid?
Sure.
That's what I'm going to go with.
I mean, first 18 months is a pretty significant amount of time. So when you look back at the Switch and what we got in the first 18 months was a lot of key franchises. I mean, you had Zelda, Mario, Splatoon, Mario Kart, ARMS. So first 18 months of the Switch 2, I'd say Mario Kart, 3D Mario. Maybe you get a Splatoon. I mean, I think you could see a lot in the first 18 months. It just comes down to how Nintendo really wants to lay out that scheduling. But yeah, that first 18 months is really where a company tries to define what the system's going to be about. And I think Nintendo's going to come in very heavy in that first 2 years. Then had a $1.50 donation from Gideon. Is it just me, or will Sony run into BC problems with PlayStation 6 and beyond? Their BC method seems way more complex than Xbox. Apparently, they have to keep CPU clocks.
It's really hard to say where BC is going to go with Sony. I think keeping CPU clocks is really more about making sure that there's, you know, games between the base and the pro hardware doesn't have any type of issues as far as performance. So yeah, I don't really know what to say to that. As far as BC, I mean, Sony has a solution for BC. It works fine. It's certainly pretty bare bones compared to Xbox. It doesn't really do any of the fancy bells and whistles. It doesn't do the auto HDR, the upscaling and all that stuff. But again, I think it's really a matter of just waiting and seeing what Sony provides as far as hardware goes that facilitates backward compatibility.
Then had a $1 donation from Super Skittittles 44. I'm torn on what to expect from GTA 6. Either the single player will be generic and short, less than 30 hours, with the focus being on new GTA Online, or it will be a massive world that's revolutionary in its design and systems with an 80-hour campaign.
I think the answer is somewhere in the middle, leaning more towards the revolutionary side. I think it's going to impress. It's going to be a GTA game in the truest sense. There's going to be a very compelling single-player story that is meaty, that has a lot of side missions. But I also feel like the online portion is obviously where they are going to also focus on to make sure that the game is played for the next 20 years in the same way as GTA 5 is right now.
I agree. Then had a $1 donation from Warp. The perceived value of $70 games for consumers is undermined by games like Helldivers 2, Pal World, costing just $30 to $40, when very good AAA-like games are being released for $40 or less. It becomes hard to justify spending $70 for a game. You're not wrong.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, that's one of those... That's where the consumer ultimately still has power and say. And yes, you could look at a Helldivers 2 and say this is a, you know, fantastic game. Its budget definitely wasn't going to be in the areas of $200, $300 million. And it did exceptionally well when it came to market because it was quality gameplay. It resonates with the base. And that's what more and more developers need to do. It's not about ballooning budgets. It's about delivering an immersive experience. And just delivering a quality, entertaining product. Then had a $1 donation from Dan Clancy. Hi, Nate and MVG. What do you think would happen first? PlayStation 5 games on Xbox or Nintendo games coming to PC? Thank you. Sorry, I can't donate more. First, your dollar donation is greatly appreciated, and it is more than enough.
I'm going to say PlayStation 5 games on Xbox because Nintendo will never put their games on PC.
I agree. I just can't envision a world where Nintendo is putting anything on PC. We see how they feel about mods. Then had a $1 donation from Low Key Cool. I think maybe it's finally time for Xbox and Sony to put an emphasis on CPU performance for next gen. Watching Dragon's Dogma 2 benchmarks on console, and it said 78x3D is just a 45-watt chip. Under load when gaming. Tired of seeing laptop CPUs in consoles.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Yeah, CPU's always been an issue when it comes to console gaming. It's always been one of the bottlenecks and features that developers and such complain about where they want more, and we just don't get them. Ask developers about the Jaguar cores from the PlayStation 4.
Oh my God.
That's the reaction you'll get from all of them.
Yes. It's terrible.
Then had a $3 donation from Tom. What is the real reason for job cuts across the gaming industry? Is it really lower profits and companies needing to scramble to stay alive, or do CEOs just want more insane profits and will do anything to obtain them, even if it means gutting studios? That will depend on the studio. Some of the bigger studios are the latter. Smaller studios are the former.
Yeah. There's definitely, it's not one size fits all. The big publishers, they have shareholders. They have stakeholders, but the smaller companies literally don't have enough money to pay their employees. So there's different facets to it. It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to some of the smaller studios, they have their games have to sell when they bring them out, and sometimes the games just don't perform. Then had a $1 donation from Liam Warner. What do you think the future of Amiibo is? I think the next console will at least support them, but everyone each year keeps predicting their discontinuation despite there still be new releases and tons of restocks. I think it will continue personally. I feel Amiibo, they may still have the functionality and maybe Nintendo will release them here and there for a select few games, but I kind of feel as though Amiibo has lasted as long as it has. Strictly because Nintendo had committed that every single Smash Brothers character would have an amiibo, and because the DLC went on for so long, they had to just continue to make the amiibo. But largely, the amiibo still feels though it's a collector's item. So I think it will exist. It'll just be very downplayed in its functionality and overall purpose for gaming. It's just going to be that collectible that people buy, and we're not going to see it as prevalent as we did throughout the Wii U and Switch generation. And our final question for this episode comes from Lord Osis, donated $1. Hi, Nate and MVG. What are your three most anticipated games at the moment?
Elden Ring DLC. Metroid Prime 4. And I don't know what my third is right now. Give me yours. I'll think of a third.
Well, Elden Ring DLC. Indiana Jones.
Ooh, that's my third. That's my third.
And honestly, I'm going to say Fable.
I like it.
It's not coming out this year or anything, but I'm looking forward to seeing the direction Fable has for us, and hopefully we get to see it again this year at either the June showcase or the Game Awards or something, because we really need a nice deep dive into the gameplay of Fable. But I think those are my three. I mean, Elden Ring is at number one by such a significant margin.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But that is our final question for this episode. If you'd like to support the channel, we have a Streamlabs link in the description below. Donate any dollar amount, ask a question. We will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, we will dedicate the episode to you. And once again, this episode is dedicated to the Zelda Sensei and Shamsa. We thank you for your support. And we hope you enjoyed this unique type of episode where we just answered all of your questions to clear the backlog. So now moving forward, all future episodes will have the Streamlabs section at the end of a more normal episode moving forward. But with that, I'd like to thank everyone for their continued support of the channel and MVG for joining me as always.
It was a pleasure, Knight. Thanks for having me on.
And if you have any thoughts on any of the questions and answers we gave, let us know in the comment section below. And until next time, continue to embrace the hate.